Okay. So I want to talk about a section of Parshas Bamidbar we definitely haven't talked about together ever. And it usually gets kind of like, I don't know, it's not very famous. But it I think has a very meaningful message, I think. We'll see. Well, I'll see what you think. Take a look at source number one. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe v'el Aaron l'amor. Al tachrisu es shevet mishpechos ha-kahati. Al tachrisu means do not allow the children of Kahas, right? One of the, they were Gershon, Kahas, and Meraru, the three sons of Levi, and each one of their children, their families, have different jobs as Levim, right? So Gershon, Kahas, and Meraru, each one of them had their own responsibilities. So the Bnei Kahas shouldn't get destroyed. Why would I think they would get destroyed? Okay, Vizos Asu, this is what you should do to make sure they don't get destroyed. Vizos Asu Lahem V'chayu, this is what you should do for them, and they should die and be alive. V'lo Yamusu, they shouldn't die. It's a lot of negative, scary language. V'yishtam Es Kodesh HaKodashim Aaron U'banav Yavo'u V'samu Osam Ish Ish Alavrasa V'amasa'o. So what should they do? So when they go to deal with the holy objects, the objects in the base of the Mishkan, which they would carry. So what should they do? And they should take them, each person, their avoda, and with the thing they carry. They shouldn't see that the Kodesh is somehow defiled, vamesu, and end up dying. So what is this referring to? So Rashi says, take a look at the text above. What's the text above? Source number two. I put it below, but it's really above. It's just the beginning of that parak. Beginning of that parak, the Torah tells the following. Zos avadas b'nei kahas b'ol moed kodesh kodashim. Uba aron ubanav bin soa hamachaneh. What's going to happen when it's time to travel? V'horidu es parochas hamasach v'chisu ba'es aron ha'edus. What would happen? It was time to travel. So there was a parochas which was separated between the kodesh and the kodesh hakadashim. And they would take apart they were taking apart the whole Mishkan, right? So what are you going to do with the Aron? You would, as you would take it apart, you would take the paroches and drape it over the Aron, okay? And it wasn't just the Aron that had this; it actually did this to all of the Kelim. Right? Take a look at the next pasuk. V'nasnu alav kisui or tachash uparsu beged kelil techeles milmala v'samu badav. So they put the covering. I think in here it says dolphin skin, but the tachash was not a dolphin, I don't think. The Tachash was a miraculous animal that Chazal say existed only in the time of the Mishkan. It was like a unicorn something type of thing. And it was like, and it was only existed then, and they used its skin for its hide for the covering of the Mishkan. So you then make that and put on top of the paroches. Val shulchan apanim yifrisu beget techeles, and on top of the shulchan they would put this you know, sheet made of tcheles. V'nasnu alav v'sakaros v'sakapos v'samakinakios v'skisos anasech v'lechem atamid alav. Everything all the different things that were used for it were placed on it, and then they'd cover it up. U'parsu alehem beged tolashani, and they would take another beged on top of those things. V'chisu oso, etc., etc., etc. And the bottom line is, if you go through the text, it tells you at every single one of the kelim in the Mishkan, when they traveled, they would cover it up with something. Okay, nice. But now, if you now understand this, now go back to the first source. So what is the Torah telling them? That the Levim have to be very careful that after the Kohanim are done covering everything up, you better not lir'os kibalas hakodesh hamesu. You shouldn't watch in some way. You shouldn't see the Kelim. They should only be covering them. But somehow, and if they would see them, what would happen to them? Sounds like they would die. And there's a very, very strong language here. Be really careful. This is what you do. Make sure the kahas isn't destroyed. Make sure kahas, you're not going to die. You're going to live and not die. What do you do? Make sure that kibbalah sakodesh, they shouldn't. Very strong language. So, I don't know. What do you think about this when you read this? It's confusing, normal, makes sense? A little much?
Makes sense.
Makes sense. Why does it make sense?
Protect
what?
The elements could be very hot.
Okay, so one very simple explanation. You want to just cover the K limits? They're expensive.
The Middle East.
Okay, it's expensive. Yeah, the atmosphere could be dangerous. Could, yeah.
No, they're kadosh. Only the Kohanim are supposed to be exposed to, and not the Levium. And so we want to protect the Kedusha
in some way.
Separate the Kohanim from Levium. And
so we cover it up in some way to protect the sanctity of these items. Right. Okay? Yeah. Okay. Good. And the fact that you die if you see them?
Seems a little extreme, but...
It's a little extreme, yeah.
It's a big responsibility.
It's literally a big responsibility, right? It's quite a burden for them, right? They're literally carrying them. And that concern that any moment, right, if you see the wrong thing, you could die. In fact, we have stories in Tanakh like this, right? When they were bringing the Aron back, bring to Yerushalayim, and what happened? It started to shift, and someone goes to touch it, to keep it from falling. And what happened to him? He dies on the spot, right? And then they leave it. They leave it in Goren. Corbin, Arnon, I think is where they leave it for a little while until they're ready to transfer it again, right? So there's, and again, what is he trying to do? He's just trying to keep the Aron from falling, right? But again, this concern with the Kedusha of the Kelim of the Mishkan, so much that a person would die miraculously if they wouldn't treat it respectfully. Right, because the Aron carries itself, etc. So we understand this, we know Tanakh later on, so we know these things happen. But the question is like, what is this really about? Okay, and we see different approaches. I don't know if different approaches. A few approaches in the Rishonim here, and then a couple others that I want to show you as well. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Uba Aaron ubanav." This is already on Pasuk He. Okay, so towards this earlier on, we're telling this halacha. Says Rashi, "Yachnisu ko klei kli ukli linarti ko hamifurash lo beparshas Zeus." So every kli is going to have its own anartik in English, in Hebrew now. Is when you say anartik, you're a wallet. It's called an artik, I think, but they in its own pouch, right? In its own thing, that each one has its own bag, its own carrying case, basically. You place it in its appropriate place. And the only thing that the levim are going to do, they're not going to place it in there. They're just going to carry the items. But the placing in the pouch, in the covering, that's done by the kohanim, and the levim just do the carrying. Okay, and then later on when it says, Al Tacharisu, they shouldn't become destroyed through this, Rashi says, Al Tigrim Ulahem Shiyamusu, they shouldn't end up dying from it. V'yavoliros kivalas ha-kodesh. So what does it mean? They shouldn't see the Kodesh being bala. Rashi says, L'toch nartik shalo. The Levium shouldn't see what? Bala, what does the word bolaya mean in Hebrew, usually? The v'loa is to swallow up. Yeah, to swallow. It's to be bolaya. So they shouldn't see lo yavol yiros kivalas hakodesh. They shouldn't see. Rashi says, what does that mean? They shouldn't watch the covering of the kelim, right? Rashi says l'toch nartik shalo. You shouldn't watch it being covered. Kamosh b'Rashi l'mala, right? Like I said earlier, says Rashi, right? Uparsu alav beged ploni v'chisu asob mechse ploni ubalua shalosh hu kisu yav. And it has three different coverings, and they shouldn't watch it. The levim shouldn't watch. Only the kohanim see that, and the levi shows up only when it's time for the carrying. Very specific guidelines. Fine. Ramban, source number 4. V'lo yavol yiros kevalas hakodesh, kishemachnisines akli l'toch nartiko, etc. He quotes Rashi first, sorry. And then he said, on the second line, at the end, he says, Rabbi Seinu amru v'masecha Sanhedrin, shezu azhara al hagonev kli sharis. This is also a warning to those who would consider stealing the kli sharis, shechayv misa. Right, then only Yuchai Misa for doing so. If someone finds you doing so, they could kill you on the way. If you see somebody taking the klisharis, you can go get him. You don't have to wait for a bezdin, etc. Shakaneva vagezel yikru belia. Right, so the language is leavol yros kibalas akodesh vamesu. Different pshat, says Ramban. Not just that you shouldn't watch them being covered, you shouldn't consider swallowing them up yourself, taking them yourself. Because if you do, vamesu, either Hashem's going to kill you or another Jew is going to kill you if you do that. It's the wrong thing to do. Yeah, what?
I missed the part. You said they use the skin for what?
The skin of the tachash. They would use that to cover the Mishkan, and they'd use those same coverings, it seems like, for the covering of these items themselves. But the Ramban's adding now a different pshat, that you shouldn't see this kevala sakodesh. We said it means, Rashi says, they shouldn't watch the Kohanim cover these things up. The Ramban saying it's a remez to the idea of you shouldn't steal them, because if you steal them, you're also going to die. There are stories like that also in the Gemara about people who were told by enemies to go in and take some of the klisharis and hold on to them, and things that happened to them because they did so during times of Churban. So it's a very these things happen, that people had the audacity sometimes to consider stealing the items in the Mishkan or the Mikdash. Okay, fine. But now he says further, the Ramban, next paragraph. Rabbi Avram, it's always the he's referring to Ibn Ezra. Amar kipshuto shleyavoli ros kashe yusar parochas hamasach v'yigale ha'aron. He says, what shouldn't you see? You don't allow the Levian to be there. So we always think about this, right? Like, they would put the Mishkan up, they would take the Mishkan down, and you would walk it. And like, what would happen? It was time to take the Mishkan down. And what would they do? Everybody get out. Everybody back away. You know? And you'd have to like, wouldn't want anyone to be there watching while you took down the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It's funny, right? Because the Kodesh HaKadoshim becomes this place, if you go in there, you die. But if you think about it, the place changed so many times in the Mishkan, that place was always a different place, right? Geographically. It's only once it's built, it becomes a Kodesh HaKadoshim. Once it's taken down, it's not anymore. But that change, turning that place to no longer a Kodesh HaKadoshim, was something you weren't supposed to watch. Okay? Rak acharechen, kashe yechusa. Only once you've now covered up the Aron, now yavo la seisa. So now you can come to collect it. You shouldn't watch the Aron being like left in the open like that. V'yeh kevala sakodesh, kashe yusar habinyan. Right? When the building is taken down, Me'al Aron shuhu hektish, milashon bala Hashem v'lo chamal. So the point being that bala is almost like and we're going to see this language some. Oh, actually, right here. Is it here or somewhere else? And we're going to see that the nativity is the same language. That the language of bala can also mean to swallow up, like you're going to like see it or like take. You're going to take it in, right? In a way that you're not supposed to. You're going to be like staring at it, right? Watching, gazing at the Aron that's now left in the open, right? Imagine how much people probably wanted to see it, right? We always think about it. I think about this all the time. Like the Kodesh HaKadoshim was a place you wanted to see. The idea of going on the Makam HaMikdash and seeing the Kodesh HaKadoshim, it's a very mysterious thing. The more something is hidden, the more you want to see it.
Curious.
Right? The more curious you are, you want to see it, right? So like the idea being that was considered like profane in a certain sense, like to leave the Aron open to just gazers, people just to look at it like that. Okay. V'hinei ha-levi'im mus-harim shlo yigu el Aron HaKodesh yumesu rak badim yisa'uhu. They're also told they're not allowed to touch it at all. They're only allowed to touch the poles. V'o yaziram shlo yavol yiros klal hasaras ha-binyan. And it's a second iser not to even see the deconstruction of the Mishkan, but od shi yorid Aron ha-sabaroches, as Aaron is taking down the covering. Fine. But he has one other pshat, he says. If I'll tell you what I think, he says, right, where are the kruvim? The kruvim are on top of the on top of the Aron, so they're sitting there. What's the fear? What's sitting between the kruvim, whatever that means exactly? Hashem's shechina in some way sits between the kruvim. So it's not just like not respectful to the kruvim. The concern is you're going to stare at the Aron while the kruvim are there. You might see something you're not supposed to see, which is like the shechina, right? Same idea. Why do we have the minhag to cover our eyes during Birkas Kohanim? Because in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, whatever this means, the shechina would actually come down on the fingers of the Kohanim, of the Levi, of the Kohanim, and you weren't supposed to look. And if you look, you would go blind because you weren't supposed to. So we now continue this minhag of covering our eyes.
So right, what about not looking.
For a different reason. That's for focus. That's not because you're not going to see something. That's for your own focus. But that's where that minhag comes from. So it's sort of like a similar idea. You're not supposed to look at the Aron because the Aron has the kruvim where the Shechina rests. By the way, as an aside, maybe I mentioned this before. Some people have a minhag. Men have a minhag that they take their talis and put it over their head during Birchas Kohanim. There are some women who have a minhag that they actually turn their backs to the Kohanim during. For that reason, they shouldn't see. So I heard.
I've heard.
You know, Talmid Chacham said that they think it's a mistake.
Yeah.
You're supposed to just look down. Right? What does anyone do? They don't have a talis. They just look down. So it's not because if someone's giving you a bracha, you're not supposed to turn their back on it. Right. So this idea of turning your back is really not an appropriate minhag. I heard.
What does your heart still mean?
Be destroyed. Fine. So the point being, again, lo yavol yiros bekevalas hakodesh v'mesu, meaning you shouldn't see them taking it down. You shouldn't see it being left open. You shouldn't see it being placed in its cover. There's something inappropriate about watching the Aron being left open like that. All right? Okay. And Yeah. So it's something else interesting here also in the Sforno, in source number 5. The Sforno speaks to the very specific order of events that takes place. And he writes like this. V'samu osam ish ish alavodaso v'amaso. Right, the language there is very like, each person has their specific job. The Kohen takes it down, the Kohen covers it up, the Levi takes it away. Right? He says, V'lo sheyia kol hakodem zoche. It shouldn't just be basically a free-for-all. Anybody can do whatever they want. Because by the way, if you would offer just to anybody to carry the Aron, I mean, some people would probably stay away. They'd be nervous. But a lot of people was like, sure, I'll do it. Right? They'd be excited to do that job. And then run to have the opportunity. And that's not how it works. Not anybody who wants to just can go ahead and carry the Aron. Right? Ava yamtin kol achad liyot mitzuveh ve'oseh. Every person waits for their job to be done. And maybe probably even within the Levium and within the Kohanim, different people had a specific responsibility and you had to wait for your turn. And he says, V'lo yavol yiros, right, in this last point here, but ofen zeh, lo yavol yiros, and if because it's so orderly and specific, who exactly is going to have the job, so now it's not going to happen. But ofen zeh, lo yavol yiros, kishakon mechaseh kli hakodesh, kli lakdim ish es chavero. If people are running to have the job first, what's going to happen? Someone's going to see what's happening. Right? But if you're told there's a very specific order and very specific regimen, so you're not going to see people running and grabbing and trying and then end up, right, causing whatever you want to call it, an embarrassment and lack of kavod to the Aron. And so therefore, this very specific, you know, regimen here is to continue to preserve the dignity of the Aron in that case. Fine. And the Hamak Davar, the Netziv in source number 6, so the Netziv was the Rosh Yeshiva in Volozhin. He wrote a very beautiful commentary on the Parsha, on the Torah. And he writes, he takes this language of Kivvalah, similar to some one of the points we saw in the Ramban, but he says it very, very explicitly. He writes like this. V'lo yavol lir'os Kivvalah, perush keheref ayin. What does it mean, bala? Bala means to swallow. And keheref ayin means like in a moment. What does that mean? Ukamo ba'achila. Sha'abolea bali li'isa, einu nehene ma'achilaso, ela rega habalia. What happens when a person sometimes, the Torah talk, the Chazal will talk in some situations about a person who swallows things without chewing it, or you swallow without tasting. So that's considered like a very, like...
Liquid. If it's a liquid.
Right, but like, let's say you like, you know, we would call that in English, we'd say like to wolf it down, right? Like if you swallow without chewing...
Yeah.
It's considered like
gluttonous.
It's like, yeah. What does it describe when someone swallows without even chewing? What would you? How are you describing somebody?
He's very gluttonous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're just like ravenous. It's like,
yeah,
gross.
It's
like
gets stuck in your throat. Also,
It's also not safe. It's also not safe. But it also doesn't give you a chance to like savor and appreciate. Right? You're just like eating like a crazy person. It doesn't allow for that
mindful eating.
It's not mindful eating. Correct. Yeah, good. But if you use the language of, so great. So that's how it means by food, right? To eat without, to swallow without chewing reflects a certain sense of like, it's not just that it's gluttonous, but it's a lack of respect for the food almost, right? It's like a lack of respect for yourself, right?
You don't let your palate enjoy.
You just, you're not appreciating. It's like a lack of kavod in general for the whole process of eating, right? So if that's true by eating, how do you have bolea by things that you see? So I think what he's saying is like this.
Kach, it stops being special.
Exactly. Kach haroa ve'eno masbia eno nikra shehu bolea. What does it mean to look at something as a bolea, like to swallow it with your eyes? It means to just kind of like, it's like to... Or like to gawk even, right? Like to like look in a way that's like, you know, not respectful, right? You look in a way that I want to get a look for myself. I just want to see. Like the way paparazzi, right? Look at, you know, Princess Diana was the best example, right? Like it's you treat the thing you're looking at like an object of your desire or interest. Or you're just like interested, you want to see. Right, children of celebrities, like you can be bolea, right? You're looking without a sense of respect for what you're looking at, right? So I think that's fascinating. Kach haroa ve'eno masvia. A person who looks and doesn't almost like enjoy, right? Doesn't appreciate what they're looking at. Must be eino nikrashu boleya. V'hisir akasiv shlo yiru afilu kibalas hakodesh. You shouldn't look like you're being boleya the kodesh. You shouldn't look like a person who's like peering at the kodesh in a way that's not respectful. And that's why it's so important that we, again, cover it. So I think, but really everyone's kind of giving the same explanation here, right? That it's a certain level of respect for the kelim of the Mishkan, that we treat them a certain way. We don't just look at them, but we have them covered up in a way that's like very secret and very, you know, we shouldn't allow people, not a single person, not even the Levi who's going to carry it, should be able to see it before it's covered up. Fine. So there's now the Torah in source number 7 of Saraskin. He answers a question that I know people are going to ask. What's the question we should ask? If we're so nervous about people seeing it, so there's still one problem. What? Yeah, the Kohanim are going to see it. The Kohanim are still going to see it. So what about them? So he asked that question. So look at source number 7. He said, "Davar tzarich birur, eich mutarim Aaron uvanav lirosis Aaron." What about that? How can they see the Aaron? "Valo rak achas b'shana rashay Aaron bezos lavo al kolosh hakadoshim v'rak ba'anan hakatorah." It's very specific rules of, hey, go in. Once you build a Beis Hamikdash, no problem. I mean, once you build a Beis Hamikdash, nobody goes in ever, except for once a year. But with the Mishkan, he's only supposed to go in once a year. On the other hand, he's constantly going in there and taking it down. So how do you understand that? And why is that? You shouldn't be looking at the Shechina. He shouldn't die. If I don't go in with that, you know, under that, you know, specific time and specific place with that specific korban, he should die. And it's not just Aaron doesn't do it by himself, the other kohanim also. So if Yeshlomar, he maybe gives an answer he probably would have said, "Shakohanim hamaridim besaparoches umechasim ba'asa aron." The kohen who have this job to take the parochas down and cover the aron, harei heim keumnim. It's their job. Shirashayani kaneis the kolosh hakadoshim livnos l'takein. They're like the construction workers. Like someone's got to build it, someone's got to do it, right? So they become the workers, right? To go in and to build it. Umitzvah b'kohanim, and specifically the kohanim do it. Imrak efshar, meaning we have to allow it for somebody. So who do we allow? We only allow them because we're stuck. We have no other choice. Va'aron ubanav b'shas pira kamishkan. Aaron and his sons at the moment of the taking down of the Mishkan, meharsin amanas livnos b'makom acher. They're taking it down. Why? With the goal of putting it back up. So someone has to take it down because they're planning to put it back up. Ulofikach mutarim heim be'im breyer. We have no choice, so they're allowed to. Lahoridis haparochos lachasos ba'asa aron. But again, because it's only allowed for them in this specific scenario, because no, otherwise, what are you going to do? Aval levim lo hutar. Mikayven she'efshar b'kohanim impenei she'tzarech gam lingo ba'aron. It's only them. Fine. So that's why it's so strict, only them. Fine. But Rabbi Soloveitchik had a very, I think, beautiful explanation for what this is really all about. Why are we so careful? You're going to die. If you see the Aron by accident, you didn't mean to, shouldn't happen. Lo yavol yiros kavalas hakodesh. So he says, when the ark was removed, source number 8, the Levites and Israelites were not to be present on a penalty of death. When the ark was recovered from the Philistines, the people of Beit Shemesh died upon looking at the ark. God is the ultimate nistar. So Hashem is the ultimate hidden being, right? Hashem, there's a song some people sing at Shalosh Shudis called Kel Mistater, Hashem, who is a hidden being. We once said, when I was in Shavim, we had like some like Kabbalah person. I don't know, like a person who was into Kabbalah, and he like sang Kel Mistater with us. I remember, like, in a very Kabbalistic way, which I didn't understand at all. But that was the song he sang, because that song is referenced to Kadosh Baruch Hu as being Nistar. When Moses requested to see God's countenance, God refused. Whatever is holy must be concealed. This concept applies to the human body as well. When we attempt to understand what motivated the Hashmonaim in their revolt against the Greeks, many invoke patriotism. However, patriotism is a relatively modern concept with its origins in the 18th century, right? The idea that they were like, the Hashmonaim were like nationalists fighting for this Jewish state was not an idea that existed in those days. The main reason for the rebellion was because Judaism hated nudity, and in Greece, nudity was an ideal. Roman and Greek clothing actually revealed more than was covered. The Greeks looked upon the human body as aesthetically beautiful, and whatever is beautiful should be exposed. There's no reason for beauty to be hidden. That's what they said. Judaism, on the other hand, looked upon the human being, upon the body, as sacred. The laws of burial, including the preparations of the body for burial, as well as the laws of mourning, are nurtured by one principle. The human being is holy. Humanity itself is a source of holiness, of sanctity. And to Judaism, whatever is sacred should be concealed, hidden from public view. You don't have a wake, right, for a Jew. Jewish people don't have a wake. That's not something that we do, right? Because the body is treated with respect. The way, if any person has ever had the zechus to be involved in a tahara for someone who passes away, the extraordinary kavod that's shored to a body of a person who's passed away, it's an extraordinary thing to experience. This idea extends to how he must treat the terminally ill. A person may have lost all consciousness, lying near death in an irreversible coma. Such an eventuality expresses the absurdity of human life. Yet we have a maxim, Kedushas haguf lo paka, the holiness of the body does not depart. If holiness is intrinsic to man, it can never be lost, no matter the circumstances. The terminally ill, comatose patient may have lost everything we associate with humanity, but intellect and consciousness are not the source of man's holiness. He does not lose his sanctity as a human being. So this is the first point here, the point Rav makes is that this idea of like covering that which is kadosh, right, is a very, very Jewish concept, right? It's a very, like, that we take things that are special and we conceal them and we cover them. That's very Jewish. I guess it's a zechus, but it's an uncomfortable thing, but I think that I like to do it. I go to Yavne every year and I speak to the eighth graders about sexuality. They ask a rabbi to come to talk about it. And so one of the things I talk to the eighth graders about a lot is the difference between private and inappropriate. And that they think that anything, basically what the world of social media tells you, that anything that's like permissible or anything that isn't hurting someone can be put out in public, right? Whether that's due to how we look, whatever. But even just, you know, the idea of like putting an anniversary note to your spouse on Facebook, right? It's like a very like, it's suit, right? This is what I wrote to my husband. Like, really? Like, you have to, right? Forget even like clothing. Just like, it's not, it's private, that's private, right? And something that's private, so the person will say, what do you mean? If as long as it's not inappropriate, I should share it. I can share everything. I share everything with everybody. I can share the things I do with my family. I share the things I do with my spouse. I share what I do with my children. I share it with everyone. Just everything just gets shared, right? And so what message is then shared is, what are the only things we don't share? The things we're embarrassed about. We don't share things that are negative about ourselves. So what I have argued for a long time, what it leads a teenage mind to think of is that things having to do with intimacy, for example, which hopefully aren't, at least to a certain extent, are not shared, we wouldn't share, it must mean it's something bad, because I don't share it, right? And the answer is, it's actually the exact opposite, right? The fact that we don't share it is because it's so special. We don't share the things that are kadosh, things that are, this is exactly the point, right? Things that are special and unique, we cover them, we hide them a little bit, we're not embarrassed of them. It's not that I'm embarrassed, it's a terrible, bad thing. No, just the opposite. It's such a beautiful, special thing that I'm not just going to share it with anybody. But the values have been so distorted in the world.
It's a shame.
Right. It becomes shameful,
right,
even though it's not a bad thing at all. Right? And it becomes very confusing for the teenage mind to understand, not just the teenage mind, it becomes for the adult mind also, because we've just become used to whatever is in any way okay just gets shared with a million people or 100 million people. And when really, what we believe is anything that's special doesn't get shared. Exactly. So that's like, that. You know, I think that's the first point that the Rav is making. Then he makes another point, which I think is really interesting, and I hesitate to share it with you. You're going to see why in a second, because of what I think a lot of us have a hard time relating to this, but A, it's the Rav being very honest, which I think is interesting itself, and two, I think the point is still an important point, even if we might ourselves experience it differently or believe it differently. He writes the following. From the time I was young, I learned to restrain my feelings and not to demonstrate what was happening in my emotional world. My father would say that the holier the more intimate the feeling, the more it should be concealed. So similar idea, right? There's a hidden curtain that separates between one's interior and one's exterior. And the dividing curtain shall separate for you between the holy and the holy of holies. What location is more sanctified than the inner sanctum of one's emotional life? If all is going well and one's heart overflows with happiness, he should reveal the deep interior of his soul to God. But he should not reveal it to others, lest a stranger profane his holy of holies. If, on the other hand, someone is in dire straits, mired in a cloud of pain and suffering, finding himself abandoned and alone, he should reveal his thoughts before the Creator. He should cry to him and supplicate behind the curtain. A stranger should not approach the Holy of Holies, lest in his apathy he profanes the sanctity of the mute pain that burdens the sufferer. the Kohen Gadol's rendezvous with his creator was always in solitude. And then he writes the following. My father never kissed me. When he took leave of me, he would press my hand and say, go in peace and may God watch over you. A casual onlooker, where he just hears these routine words, might be taken aback and mumble to himself, dry, brisker coldness, right? The Soloveitchiks were from Brisk. However, that observer witnessed only the exterior, that which was outside the curtain of my father's personality, and did not comprehend that his interior, his holy of holies, was full of mercy and compassion, containing a delicate but also powerful love for his children, incessantly concerned about their welfare, sacrificing himself for their future. His entire being was overwhelmed with love. At the same time, he was careful not to violate the warning, and no man shall be in the tent of meeting, protecting the privacy of his emotional life. So Soloveitchik is arguing that this idea of keeping things hidden applies even to your emotional life, which I think every person is different in that way. I think some people are more sharers, and some people are less of a sharer. The reason I was hesitant is because I think that the idea of like a father will only shake his son's hand and won't give him a hug, I think we would say like, yikes, you know? But his point is, I think the point he's making is that his father took that to a very extreme place, which was like, I'm not going to share my, whatever I'm feeling with just anybody, right? Because he wouldn't share it with anybody. Okay, but like, it's still, I think the point is still the same point, right? It's like the idea of like, I'm just going to share anything that's going on in my life with the whole world. As opposed to there's sometimes a boundary, and I think we've all felt that feeling of when somebody crosses the line into your personal space, right? Like coming into your holy of holies, ask you a question that's like crossing a line isn't appropriate. But I think we all struggle with that balance between how far are we willing to share and how much do we not want to share. And every person is different in that way. But I think the point is that having lines and having boundaries is important, right? There is a place for a boundary somewhere. And I think that the world at times loses that boundary, doesn't have any boundaries. And the value of the boundary is, again, it reminds you that certain things are special, that I share them only with certain people, or I share them only with certain people in my life, or only with myself, or only with Hashem, whatever it is. Every person is different how they do that. But I think the other point is, a lot of times people do, they tell this story of the Rav and his father shaking hands, and they do say that. Brisk, that was brisk, you know, like this coldness. And I think seeing the Rav saying like, no, it's not coldness. Like,
you received it with love.
Right.
If your child receives the message, then it doesn't matter the act.
Exactly. I just think it's fascinating to hear him talk about it himself, about his own life, that he didn't feel that it was cold. You know, that he didn't feel that it was cold, even though someone
later. That was his rationalization.
It could be.
It's a little weird.
Could be. I think it's, I find it weird.
Sometimes that's what you were sharing. Like, yes, if he said in public he mm-hmm. never kissed me, right? And, you know, this is what he would do in public, but, you know, when there weren't people around, he expressed it, then that makes sense. But this is a little extreme.
But you can get love from your parents in different ways. If he saw how intently his father was interested in everything he had to say, or there are different love languages or different ways of receiving love and different people have different ways. As long as his son received the message and he was doing something right.
No, I agree with you. I think that it's not my personal experience. Like, this would not be my personal experience. I don't have this experience. Like, not with my parents. I don't. That's not an experience that I can understand. And I would have found it to be like probably hurtful. But I just think it's fascinating to like hear him talk about it. But I think it's exactly your point that like for different people it's different. And I think for different people it goes in different ways. It's not objectively one way or the other.
There has to be a balance.
But there has to be some balance in some way. To any physical touch. Right. So I think it has to be a balance. I agree. So this, to many of us, that's why I hesitated in sharing it, because I think to many of us, it seems extreme. But I think the point is interesting. And I think the overall point, I think it's very important. That message of, like, you know, and I think it's something that we almost don't realize how much we are. The more I teach this topic, that topic of like intimacy and things like that, the chassan classes, it's the more I notice it, that struggle that you know, teenagers and young adults, as they grow up in society, connected to society, with that balance of like, there must be something wrong here if it's not being shared. And I think, because the more they're involved in the world with social media, it's a messaging that you know, I think is important to counter message. Like, no, it's okay. It's okay if you don't share. You can share some things. You'll decide. But it's a choice to choose. We should be choosing it. We should be thinking about it. We should be considering it. How much we share, how much we do things in public, how much we do things in private. That decision is a decision rather than just doing it the way that society tells us to. But I thought I'd add one other piece to this. And that is that if we find, right, that the Torah so emphasizes that the beauty inside anything, right, is found underneath, right? So the way that we are able to appreciate other people, right, is by recognizing that so much of who they are isn't really what they're sharing necessarily, right? And Volbi in Source Number 9 in the Sefer Ali Shur, so he talks about what it means, the idea of what's kavod. What is kavod that we share with another person? And he says the following, and we'll end with this. I have a lot more to say about it, but we'll stop with this here. He writes, kavod hu mishorish kaved. Kavod, when you show someone kavod, honor, it comes from the word kaved, which means heavy. V'hafcho hakitzoni hu klala. The opposite of giving someone kavod is to curse them. Milashon kal, light, right?
And what about kal?
Right. So something that's light, you take someone lightly, you don't give them honor, right? Kishani midyaches amishu bekovid rosh. Ani mechavdo. When I treat someone with sincerity and reality, right, the person puts their phone away, right? They look at you in the eye, they're not checking their text while they talk to you, right? Like, that's how I know that the person appreciates me, right? Because they treat me with heaviness, with sincerity. They're really paying attention, right? In mikilimbo, if they feel like I'm not that important, they're not really noticing, they're not really paying attention, so then mikalimoso, that's a klala. Right, kol ocha adam, and he talks about when a person kol ocha adam mitzapel akach sheichabdu oso who mitkashel chabed acharim. When a person's always looking for other people to be mechabed them, wants to share all the time, and wants people to listen to them, so then you're not able to show kavod to other people. Vizobi peishu roed at smoke kirmakaz kol alam. He looks at himself as the center of the world. Asher kol hakavod magi araklo. Everything should come to me. Umevad zot etzem ayod hakavod inyan ruchani. But what's the opposite? When I learn to listen to other people and I focus on them and I listen to them, I'm not always looking to share, but I'm looking to hear what they have to say. There's no greater way to show kavod to another person. Right? It's taken me a long time because of being married to notice that the great value of not always being a sharer, but just of being a listener. And that, right, the longer I do a lot of the things that I do, the more I realize that we think that if we're not adding something or saying something or adding information that somehow we're not helping. But actually in reality, the more we listen to someone and allow them to feel heard and feel that someone notices what's inside of them and notices that what's in there is special and wants to pay attention and listen to that, that's the ultimate sense of feeling that someone is giving you kavod. Why? Because again, the person is recognizing that which is in there matters. Right? That which is covered up, and that which I don't just see normally is the thing that matters the most about a person. So on the one hand, it's a lesson for ourselves about, you know, deciding how much we share and don't share and put out there and don't put out there. But it's also a lesson in the other direction in terms of how we pay attention to other people and see what's in there. And the more we can sit quietly sometimes and like hold our tongue and not say and just listen. And most people I find, we like people who like to listen to us, right? We like people who are interested, who ask questions, who are curious about us. People who are curious about us, not the people who just want to share things all the time, are the people that we typically enjoy being around the most because they care. They ask questions. They ask the second question. Oh yeah, what was that like? Tell me about that. Right? That's the way you get to know somebody, and that's the way you show them kavod. So this idea of the sharing really goes, I think, in both directions in that way. And I think takes us, with the Rav's point, a much deeper message. It's not just that, I mean, it's its own beautiful message of not treating the mikdash in a way that's kal, but also that it teaches the general message of the way we share or don't share and the way we get to understand what's deeper inside other people. Okay. Have a wonderful day, everybody.